6:13, some nice cotton candy colored skies as the sun comes up. Crescent City Connection lit up in blue for the most part because some of the lights are out, and I got to get that fixed if you're going to pay to sponsor the light color, right? Anyway, it makes you think that fall's coming eventually, even though it's hotter than get out. And Jeff Palermo joins us now. Before you know it, Jeff Palermo, we'll be getting ready for LSU to play Clemson.
Yeah, we're getting there. We're getting there. Less than 2 weeks away, right?
Yeah, crazy when you think about it, but it's good in another way. Tell me what LSU's been up to.
Actually, less than 3 weeks away. So, yeah, we got a little bit more. Well, Saturday had LSU had its first scrimmage. Media was not allowed, but Lane Kiffin did give us a description of what they saw, and he's talked about how the defense dominated first. They went one-on-ones, meaning starters versus starters. Defense came out strong in that game, but he liked how the offense rallied and played better as the scrimmage went along. Sam Levitt, according to Lane Kiffin, showed off some of his mobility, and in fact, the social media team for LSU football put out some really short clips of the scrimmage, and in one of those clips, you get the sense that Sam Levitt scrambled into the end zone for a touchdown, and a reporter asked Lane about that yesterday, and he was a little surprised that that was out there in the public realm. And if you go try to find that practice video or that highlight video today, you're not going to find it. They took it down.
Really?
Everything is being played very close to the vest right now, Tommy, but he also did mention that Harlan Berry had a long touchdown run in that game, and there were no major injuries. There were several guys that did not practice yesterday or were not at practice, at least during the media viewing portion, but nothing significant really there to report, according to Lane Kiffin. So sounds like they got a lot done. You know, one of the major focuses, I think, at this point, obviously is you're trying to get your starters ready, but I think the other thing that Lane's really trying to build is depth, trying to make sure that, not only are they pretty solid along the starting lineup, which on paper they appear to be, but building that depth, I think, is a big thing. You know, one thing that, Lane did mention was the pressure that the defense was able to get on Sam Levitt early on. So something I think, obviously, there's always these concerns with the offensive line, and I think a lot of LSU fans can just remember to the last couple of seasons and how mightily that unit struggled, and they're really hoping for an improved team on the offensive line. But I would say that LSU's got some really good pass rushers, and we've talked a lot about these freshman defensive linemen as well, so that might have been a part of it. Kind of hard to really analyze it too much since the media was not able to put their eyeballs on that scrimmage.
Tell me about the offensive line, because I didn't really ask you about that, about starters and about depth.
Well, starters, obviously it starts with Jordan Seaton, the offensive tackle. He was the guy they brought in from Colorado, second team, all Big 12 player last year. I think one of the mock draft projections had him as a top 10 pick next spring, so you're looking at a potentially dominant player there. Very well-spoken kid. I had an opportunity to speak with him last week. So he's kind of the leader there, along with Braylon Moore, who returns as the starter. Bo Bordelon is a starting guard, former Newman star who's been on the team now. This is his fifth season, and he's finally getting an opportunity to start. And Lane Kiffin said earlier in camp that he truly has earned this opportunity. So far, he's beating out Devin Harper, who was a transfer from Ole Miss, who was a standout high school player at Calvary Baptist up in Shreveport. You got Alou Ba, who's a transfer in from Maryland, who I think last year only gave up like one sack. He seems like someone that's a kind of a plug-and-play type of guy, and I think they feel really good about him. And then Weston Davis has been the guy starting at right tackle for them. And Weston Davis certainly had his struggles a season ago. But this kid's a five-star prospect, and there's some talent there. And I think there were probably some people that were surprised that Lane Kiffin kept Weston Davis, but they saw something there, and we'll see how much better he is this season.
It does take some time for the offensive line to gel as a unit, right?
Oh, for sure, for sure. I mean, and this kind of also goes into just the team, you know, trying to gel as a whole as well, right? I mean, I think that's been one of the things that, you know, we've talked quite a bit about is with 60-plus new players trying to get everybody on the same page. It seems, you know, Lane kind of likes what he sees so far with that. He feels good, but you're never really going to know until this team is put into some true adversity moments, and, you know, how they react at that time is then you really get a true gauge of that.
You got a nice piece about Blake Baker written at WWL.com. Talk about that, Jeff.
Well, Blake Baker, of course, you know, had an opportunity to be a head coach at a couple different places last December. Tulane, which is his alma mater. Memphis was the other one. Lane did a great job in retaining him. And I think probably the message was to him was, hey, you know, stay here. We're going to win at a high level here. And then when you're that will allow you to build your resume, and then you can go get a head coaching job then at a Power Four school instead of having to go to one of these mid majors. And you just never know at a place like that, right? You just it could turn on you. You know, you lose. You don't know where you're going to be supported financially. Maybe there's some promises made, but they don't come through. All those kind of things. Why don't you take the Kirby Smart route, right? You know, be a coordinator, and then wait for that really good job to open, and that let that be your first head coaching job. And it's worked out well for Kirby Smart at Georgia. You know, even though this is his first head coaching job, he's built has one of the best college football programs in the country. And I think that was what Lane told him, hey, that might be a better route for you. And of course, you know, he got a nice contract extension at Blake Baker. And the fact that you have a lot of the same offensive assistants together that were at Ole Miss last year, and a lot of the defensive assistants, there's some new guys. There's Chris Kiffin, Lane's brother, who's now coaching linebackers, which allows Blake Baker to be, because Blake was both defensive coordinator and linebackers coach under Brian Kelly, so that gives him an opportunity to really digest everything about the defense and not have to necessarily micromanage what's going on with the linebackers. So that's freed him up a little bit. And he's a guy that feels really good about this group. I think everyone is, you know, one of the storylines has been these three freshman defensive linemen, and Deuce Gerald and Richard Anderson and Lamar Brown. And that is awesome to know that you're going to have three freshman defensive linemen playing. It's awesome in the fact that that's great for 2027 mm-hmm. and 2028, but what about 2026? These kids are going to go through some growing pains. They're going to find out this is not high school anymore at points during this season, and there's going to be times where they are going to be humbled at times. And how is that going to impact their defense? And I think that's a big concern. But one of the things that Blake said, too, is that they've really been able to build up some depth, especially in the defensive secondary. We talked about the emergence of Jace Thomas pushing to Marcus Cooley for playing time at one of the safety positions, and they've also feel like they've been able to do that at defensive end. Dylan Carpenter is a guy that's been around in this football program for a while, and Blake talked a lot about him, about how he's really becoming a nice little depth piece behind Prince Will Umanmielen and Jordan Ross.
All right, let me take a quick break. We'll pick it up. We come back. 6:22 traffic now, WWL. 6:28, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. Somebody texted in, can you ask Jeff about Coach O and what's he up to with LSU? So I'll ask Jeff Palermo right now, hey, what's up with Coach O and LSU?
Well, very interesting. He wasn't at practice on Monday, and Ed Orgeron said he's not been feeling well. And from what I understand, he also wasn't at the scrimmage on Saturday. So, and Lane kind of half jokingly said, "You could have imagined that conversation when I told him, you know, it's best that you be at home right now." Mm-hmm. So I think Ed Orgeron wanted to be out there, and he you know, this is probably a time of the year that he really loves. You know, it's preseason camp. The guy loves, you know, coaching the finer aspects of being a defensive lineman, and this is when you can really get into the nitty-gritty about it, and he's not out there. So practice is tonight, the next practice, and we'll see if Coach O is back out there. But I think it's been a great addition because, you know, now with all these analysts that coaching staffs, and Blake Baker was asked about this last Friday about just how huge the staff is. I mean, you literally can have three different guys coaching a position unit. Like they'll have three different defensive linemen or defense. You know, Sterling Lucas is one of them. Ed Orgeron's another. They'll have another coach out there as well, kind of coaching these guys up, and it allows you to get a lot of reps in. Right, you can really break up that unit, whether it's the linebacker unit, running back, defensive back. When you have all these coaches out there, it really allows you to do a lot more in a short period of time. And then, you know, one other thing about that scrimmage last night, they ran 170 plays, which gives you an idea of how fast-paced a Lane Kiffin offense is.
I heard that Sam Leavitt got in the end zone.
He got in the end zone, but you're not going to be able to see it.
No.
You can look all you want. You could search every social media channel that you know, but you're not going to be able to see it anymore, Tommy.
That had to be something when he found out it was out there.
I can imagine the conversation he had with somebody after that press conference.
Are you out of your freaking mind? All right, thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
All right.
We'll come back, talk about the Omni Hotel at the Convention Center right now. Time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. It is 6:46. We're joined by Cameron Henry, Louisiana State Senator and Senate President, to talk about this hotel for the Convention Center. How you doing, Cameron?
Morning, buddy. How are you?
I'm all right. You know, it seemed pretty simple where you just, if you could build a hotel, you put up the money, you build a hotel, and then if you make money, fine. If not, fine. But it's not that simple when it comes to this, is it?
No. The structure of this deal is different than most I've seen as it relates to a hotel. And this is something that was put in play several years ago with the contract that the Expedition Hall signed. And we're just trying to sort through it all to make sure it's the best interest of not only the city and the state. I mean, this has, you know, 45-year ramifications on it. And I don't think people have taken the time. I think now they are. I think now they've taken the time to realize, you know, what the long-term expenses are, the exposure is for everyone. So I think at the end of the day, we're going to get there. I just think, like everything else, at least that I like to do, is I'd like to make sure that everybody understands what we're agreeing to. And then if they like it, then we'll vote for it and move forward. But we'll have no surprises in the future.
To be clear, you're not against the hotel. You're just looking at the whole funding mechanism and the timeline and everything else, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, we know that it's important for us to have new hotels in the city of New Orleans. That's a need that the NFL has expressed as relates to getting the Super Bowl in 2031. And if you want to go after your bigger conventions that are lifeblood around here, we have to have that. And it's a need. Like, we know we need it. Therefore, we're offering up, the Expedition Hall is offering up $120 million in incentives for them to build the hotel here. That's a lot of money for a hotel that's going to make money that we know we need, right? I mean, it's not like we're asking for a speculation business to show up and hope it makes it. I think if a new hotel comes here, odds are it's going to do well. And if that's what the market requires now, meaning we're looking, I know I spoke to the governor yesterday, and he's asked the groups to go look at what other states are doing. And if the market now requires incentives for people to build hotels, that's what the market dictates. And so be it. Let's make sure these incentives are on par with what everybody else is doing.
That's my question.
We don't want to be an anomaly.
Yeah, that was my question about the market demanding, because if the hotel is going to make money and it's a garden spot for a hotel, why do they need incentives in the first place? You would think Hilton or who, I don't know, give me a hotel company, would say, no, we want to build there. You don't have to give us anything. Just let us build a hotel there and the rest will take care of itself. But that's not the climate?
Well, that's what we're kind of working through that now. That's why we continue to kind of delay a little bit to make sure we get all the information and make sure that it's everyone's, you know, the Omni's position is going to be to get the best deal for the Omni and their shareholder. I get that. I appreciate that. But our job is to make sure we're getting the best you know, the best deal for the taxpayers, both on the local level and on the state level. So we're just slowing up again, and everybody's gathering more information. And historically, the more information you have, the better decision you make. And that's all we're going to do. I think we'll be able to work with the folks from the Omni, who I've met before, and I'm working with a lot of the folks in New Orleans to make sure that this deal works long-term for the city and the state. And I think we'll get there. We just need to make sure people understand how long this deal goes for. 45 years is a long time to dedicate sales tax, and to make sure that, you know, it just makes basic common sense, and get a look at what other states are doing. And I think if we see that other states are doing the same thing, we'll move in that direction. If we seem to be a little bit more generous than most, and then maybe we have to go back and, you know, renegotiate with them a little bit. But, you know, I think everybody's going to work in good faith.
And that's an interesting comment, because it is a competitive environment with Austin and Dallas, and I know some other cities in Texas, other cities around the country. But has any other hotel company expressed an interest in building a hotel there besides Omni, or do you know?
I don't have the information on that. You'd have to talk to the Expedition Hall folks on to see if this was a competitive bid where we bid out who wanted to build it, or did Omni approach Archer? How did that relationship begin? I would think that it would be pretty easy to get somebody to build a hotel in downtown New Orleans, because we need them so desperately. But maybe I'm not a hotel person, so I don't want to speak as if I know more than I do.
So what is your major concern here, Cameron, about the deal?
Well, I mean, I think when you're if the state doesn't help the Expedition Hall out, then they're on the hook for $120 million. That's an enormous amount of money for them to be on the hook for. And usually Expedition Hall at some point in time is going to need renovations and so forth. They're just going to come back to the state and ask us for money because they don't have the money because they're doing this, right? They're going to use this money to get the hotel, and they'll be short money somewhere else. There's also a line in here that if the council, if the city council doesn't pass a pilot program, which is going to kind of guarantee a minimum tax, The hotel is going to be taxed at the average rate of all the hotels now, not as if it was a new hotel. Mm. Obviously, if it's a new hotel, it'd be taxed more. If that doesn't work, then the Expedition Hall will owe the Omni an additional $2 million a year for the next 45 years. Mm. That's an enormous amount of money. So at some point in time, and this is what I'm working with Mr. Berger on, Dale Berger, good friend, we're hopefully going to meet up today or tomorrow to break down exactly who's paying what. And does it equal a good deal for the city and for the state? Because it seems like we're subsidizing a lot of this hotel, but the hotel is going to make money. We both know that. So we want to make sure that this is making sense. And I'm sure people listening probably are pausing for a second and going, man, a hotel in New Orleans is going to make money. Mm-hmm. Usually the revenue you generate pays off your debt. And then over time, you make money once your debt's paid off. This is the state and the city paying off the debt, and obviously the hotel is going to still collect revenue. So we want to make sure that number balances out. But look, I spoke to the governor yesterday about it, and this isn't something where he said, look, I'm mad at New Orleans, we're not moving forward. This project does not fall in that bucket. So I can assure everyone it's not a vendetta of any sort. This is just trying to figure out all the term sheets of all the money that's supposed to flow. Is the stadium and expedition going to participate in this or not? Is the city of New Orleans going to come up with cash? Or are they just not going to collect taxes in the future? All these things are very legitimate questions that need to be answered. And, you know, I'm working well with Mr. Cook at the convention center. So everybody's doing their part. It just, look, this is a complicated deal. And kind of like how you started off this conversation, usually hotel deals are you build them, they generate revenue, you pay off the debt, and you move forward.
Yeah.
This is unfortunately isn't that straightforward, but we're going to get it there.
But that is an ideal location, is it not? Would you not think?
Yeah, next to the convention center. Yeah. Yes. Short of being on Bourbon Street, I don't know how. I don't know.
I don't either. That's why I wonder. you know, you talk about political tensions, mad at New Orleans, but the governor wants a Super Bowl. He knows this is integral to getting another Super Bowl. So the tensions between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, they don't really apply here, do they? Or do they, Cameron?
No, not at all. And look, the Super Bowl is an important economic driver for the city of New Orleans, but I think everybody needs also to step back and think about how much time and effort, at least from my side, we have put into focusing on a hotel that's going to be built in 2 years on the off chance that we get a Super Bowl mm-hmm. in 2031. you know, the city and the state is going to help with this, whether I think whether the city likes it or not. We have got to find other economic engines for the New Orleans area. If the city is going to be where we want it to be, and a hotel is important and the Super Bowl is important, but that's the main focus right now of everyone. Think about it. This is a hotel, probably take 2 years to build roughly. And we're trying to get a game in 2031. We've got to have something in between that gap, right?
We've got to
be working for more on the Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 companies that we really need to start focusing on that, not just strictly tourism.
Not to mention 45 years of tax rebates after that Super Bowl, right?
Well, that was my logic, is how many Super Bowls are we going to get in the next 45 years,
yeah,
right, to pay for this? And if that's the only reason we're doing it, which I don't think it is, we're trying to get other conventions. But as you see, the return on investment of what we've done in Richland Parish, where with that data center there, those teachers, because of local sales tax collections, were able to get a $50,000 bonus,
yeah,
or check. I mean, that didn't go to just Republicans and Democrats. That went to every teacher up there. Got that. The state is now looking at that as a model for, okay, what from a local sales tax collection, what are you going to be able to put back and help your local? So we're going to work through it all, but I think we're going to get there.
Thank you, Cameron. Appreciate it. Cameron Henry, Louisiana State Senator and Senate President. We'll take a break. Come back 6:55, 5 till 7. Traffic now, WWL.